Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And this is James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. And we welcome you wholeheartedly back to another fantastic year of the New World next week, which, of course, as always, you can find all the information, past episodes, documentation, and more at NewWorldNextWeek.com. James, there was quite a bit of theater here in the United States last night. And as I even looked at the telescreen, you could be forgiven for thinking the coverage was of some sort of sports game, as they even had the little ticker counting down to, you know, how many minutes remain till we could reach a deal of the false flag fiscal cliff. And we'll explain that in just a moment. But from The Guardian, Congress's manufactured non-solution to its manufactured fiscal cliff crisis. The fiscal cliff deal, of course, doesn't even stop tax hikes, doesn't reduce the deficit, doesn't avoid spending cuts, and it's not even really a deal. However, it is a habit of the United States Congress never to congratulate itself until it has utterly failed to accomplish what it set out to do. Needless to say, the Congress is particularly delighted with its work in leaping over the fiscal cliff last night. That would be January 1st here in the States. Of course, it'll never be put that way. Amid the usual Washington smoke and mirrors, lawmakers will talk about the benefits of the deal. It will keep, or rather, it will cut taxes. It has come in time to avoid the real fiscal cliff. It will reduce the U.S. budget deficit. It will represent bipartisan yada yada. It does precisely none of those things. The much-praised deal is as thoughtless and hasty as you would expect from anything cobbled together at the last minute. Lawmakers should regard it not with self-congratulatory glee, but with suitable shame at their failure to think through major issues that impact the American economy. This Guardian op-ed even actually includes a comedian's tweet that says, "Praising Congress for the fiscal cliff deal is like giving an arsonist an award for putting out his own fire." And James, we referenced that. That pretty much sounds like a false flag event where you pull off the event but blame it on someone else and you get to kind of come in as the savior, right?
A financial false flag. Wow, what a surprise. It's exactly what we've been talking about for several years now, breaking the economy in order to come together and fix it. Well, in this case, of course, the fiscal cliff crisis was all just kabuki theater, and it's all just partisan politics in Washington, and they are just basically patting themselves on the back for not solving a problem. And for more on that, I would point people to an interesting infographic from Zero Hedge, which compares the rise in spending over 2011 versus the amount that's going to be saved in by these tax cuts, their tax rises, etc. And it's a ridiculous comparison, to say the least. And of course, it just goes to show the fundamental underlying precept of all of this, which is that the Federal Reserve is going to be creating $1 trillion over the next 12 months in mortgage-backed securities and bond buyouts. It's just ridiculous. And of course, how are they creating that money? They're just printing it into existence. How is the U.S. government getting its money? It's borrowing it from the Fed and other people who will buy the bonds. So it's a ridiculous crisis that has been created by the financial system itself. So that's not going away with any kind of fiscal cliff deal. And as this article points out, tax hikes are still going to happen. The fiscal cliff has really just been moved over to March now, and it's all just going to keep going on and on and on because they love the state of crisis and the power that it gives them. And I'm actually going to posit that 2013 is going to be a year of financial false flags in a number of different ways, talking about currency wars and talking about other types of financial things that we're going to be seeing in the next year. I'm going to be talking about that in my newsletter that's coming out this Saturday, so I hope people will take a look at that.
James, we also want to include another important note from Bloomberg. Senate passed deal means higher tax on 77% of households, mostly because of the expiration of a payroll tax cut. And you can learn more about that. We'll spare you some of the economic jargon. That again, is all there to sort of make you go, oh, well, God, I can't understand any of this. I better not pay attention to any of it. Like the massive tax code here in the States itself. James, our second story on this new year of New World next week will blast off to the future, and an article from RigZone.com. I love whenever we can include new news sources that we would probably never usually look into, because this is about oil, my friends. Scientists find mega oil field. Have our wishes been answered? Scientists have found an oil field which contains 200 times more hydrocarbons than there is water on the entire Earth. Is it time to wave peak oil goodbye forever? Maybe not just yet, because this oil field is 1,300 light years away. But scientists at work at the Max Planck Institute in Germany, using the 30-meter telescope of the Institute for Radio Astronomy, discovered a vast cloud of hydrocarbons within the Horsehead Nebula galaxy in the Orion constellation. Upon discovery of the cloud, IRAM astronomer Viviana Guzman declared that, quote, the nebula contains 200 times more hydrocarbons than the total amount of water on Earth, exclamation point. Just for those of you curious as to exactly how many barrels of oil that roughly equates to, 155 quintillion, 238 quadrillion, 95 trillion, 238 billion, 95 million, 250,000. Now, you might be wondering how oil, which is supposedly produced from organic matter buried millions of years ago, could possibly exist in space. It turns out that these hydrocarbons were likely created by the fragmentation of giant carbonaceous molecules called polysilic aromatic hydrocarbons, which are produced during the death of a star. There's even a theory that molecules such as these could have served as the first organic compounds for creating life. Now, James, this story started to break around November of last year. However, we'll include flashbacks to February of 2012 from ESA.int. Titan's surface organics surpass oil reserves on Earth, and even just back in the summer of 2012, asteroid mining venture backed by James Cameron and Google CEO Larry Page. James?
What, oil fields 1,300 light years away? Oil on the surface of Jupiter's moons? What on Earth is going on here? Oh, wait, that's right. Abiogenic oil, yes. The idea that oil is not necessarily just the crushed up juices of dinosaur bones and leaves from a few million years ago, that there's actually another way to produce hydrocarbons. And this is proof positive that there is abiogenic oil for people who were skeptical on that point. So again, I think this is an interesting little story because it points out some of the things that generally they don't want you to think about when it comes to this peak oil scenario, which was created by Shell Oil back in the 1950s and has been used as a type of scaremongering for the world since that time. So it is just something to think about. It's just an interesting little scientific discovery that would probably go under the radar and not many people will really think about it because, well, what does it affect us? But here it is. And again, it just shows that there is such a thing as abiogenic oil. And I know it's something of a leap to go from that 1,300 light years away to say, well, it's happening in the Earth's crust. But at the very least, it's something that people should be looking into and wondering how it is that Russia became one of the world's largest oil producers when, by all previous estimates, they shouldn't have had that oil, which they suddenly discovered. How did they discover it? Oh, they had a different theory of where oil comes from. So again, there's a lot to be said there, and I hope in the new year to be doing some interviews with people, for example, William Engdahl, who I know who's working on a book about the peak oil fraud and how that basically came into being. So I think that stories like this one should at least give us pause for thought about where oil really comes from.
And you mentioned Royal Dutch Shell. That reminds me, I overheard on the news last night at work that I think they're busy denying another oil spill. And the other note I'll throw out, my girlfriend reminded me that this story almost sounds like the story of the fantastic film Moon from a few years ago, directed by Duncan Jones, where we've sent essentially robots into space to help us mine these new resources. So, James, our third and final story this week, as we try and do from time to time, sometimes it's just impossible, but there are positive stories. There is good news now, and a story I have posted to my own foodworldorder.com. It's also available via Twitter at Media Monarchy. The 2013 food trend, a healthy state of mind? Many companies and corporations have posted their predictions for the food trends of 2013, which of course include goofy trends. But the common theme among a majority of all the predicted food trends lists of 2013 is health. Over the last several years, our nation, that would be the USSA, has begun to shift into a more health-conscious society. Fast food restaurants offer lower sodium French fries, nutritional information for menu items and fruits, vegetables, and milk for children instead of something deep fried. Now, you could definitely look at this and say that this is just another example of a false flag, as major multinational corporations, you know, they can test the weather and see which way the winds are going to blow and go, oh, wow, these people are really into this health thing, so let's act like we care about that. So they're co-opting the movement. However, that doesn't mean they get to control it, because ultimately your decisions are your own. So I think this is ultimately a positive thing, and we can really vote, you know, vote with our own dollars here. I think it's interesting to also tie in a few other positive notes, James, and I'll throw all these out, and you can take them or leave them as you wish. On a different site, on cyberspacewar.com, another positive one: innovation, optimism, and opportunity all coming together to make real change. That, again, these technologies are a double-edged sword. They can be used to enslave us, although they can also be used, if wielded right, to free us all. The other one I want to mention is something I guess I would have included in our finale episode of 2012, but it's a fascinating piece from The Spectator, why 2012 was the best year ever. Another exclamation point. It may not feel like it, but 2012 was the greatest year in the history of the world. That may sound like an extravagant claim, but it is borne out by evidence. Never has there been less hunger, less disease, or more prosperity. The West remains in the economic doldrums, but most developing countries are charging ahead, and people are being lifted out of poverty at the fastest rate ever recorded. The death toll inflicted by war and natural disasters is also mercifully low. We are living in a golden age. James?
Well, I have my misgivings about that Spectator article, but I do enjoy the point about the food trends for 2013, and I hope people will take a look at that article, because it at least brings one term that's new to me to my attention, which is locavores, people who will insist on eating things that have been produced locally. And if that is a trend for 2013, then I think that's only for the good, because I think one thing that we've understood in recent times is that it is better to be able to look the person who grew your food in the eye and shake their hand than to get it from some nameless, faceless corporation that's putting who knows what chemicals into it in some factory in some halfway around the world. So that is for the good. I think there are some positive trends. And again, it's not to be Pollyanna-ish about this. It's to recognize that we are facing some difficult times, but at any rate, there are things that we can positively do to affect what's going on in this world. And for people who don't want to hear that message, I guess you can tune into your fear porn of choice, but I think we should help to resonate the message that there is something that we can do, and that we're not just passive recipients here waiting for the end.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think if you give into the mindset of, oh my God, we're doomed, we're screwed, martial law, new world order, it's all here, then we are doomed and we're screwed and it's martial law and new world order's here. But if we see it on the more positive side, it's funny, James, I think as time goes by, I sound more like a damn hippie. But ultimately, it's as so many others have said, it comes down to fear or love, and those are the main choices. And as for me, and I can speak for you, we're going to pick love.
Let's do it. All right. Well, I understand that you recently released some new stuff on Media Monarchy.
I did, and it was nice to see the thanks and the little bit of flurry of activity. On December 31st, I released via MediaMonarchy.com a mixtape of my favorite music of 2012. As I say, you know, it can't be news and politics all the time. And I also released episode 272 in pretty much 4 years, or rather 4 months, to the date of the last regular live episode of Media Monarchy. I essentially put together, it's a clip show, James, but it's all my appearances, or at least most of them, over the past few months on the air at Ground Zero, my new job here in Portland, Oregon. So you can hear me on the air with Clyde and with some of the other guests talking. I think we discussed Petraeus Gate, and we discussed GMOs around Thanksgiving, and so many other things. I think for all the folks who maybe didn't follow Media Monarchy over to Ground Zero, I think it's a great way for folks to kind of check out what the show is like.
And I can attest to that because I was just listening to it myself. So I hope people will check that out. Also, on my own note, as people know, Corbett Report Radio is no longer on the air, but my podcast is coming back. In fact, it's returning to its original air date of Fridays. So the first episode of the new season will be out tomorrow. So people can stay tuned for that. Also, there will be a new video / podcast series that will be starting next Monday. So people can also stay tuned for that. And that's all I'll say for the moment.
I was just about to ask you, hey, what's that about? I haven't heard anything. I'll have to find out.
Yes, you will, like everyone else. All right, on that note, I think that'll do it for today. So, James, thanks again for the stories.
Thanks so much. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.